Chariot TechCast Episode 60, Ross Mason of MuleSoft. A quick announcement. The 2011 Philly Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise Conference is now open for registrations. Held on April 27th to 28th in Philly, PA, you can find out more about the conference, including an early bird special, at phillyemergingtech.com. Ross Mason is the founder of Mule, an open-source enterprise service bus that implements the Gregor and Hope enterprise integration patterns. Easy to install and configure, Mule does not place heavy demands on developers. There's no required canonical form, services can be expressed in a number of ways, and it supports a wide range of scripting languages, from Groovy to JRuby and beyond. Chariot integration specialist Rod Biersch and I sat down with Ross recently to talk about Mule, the version 3 release, and other related topics. We begin our interview by asking Ross how he came to create the Mule server.
I've always been a big fan of nasty integration problems. So my background really started in financial services, and I worked my way up to do architecture in some of the investment banks in London. And when I was working with systems, typically messaging was a core piece of it. And one of my last projects I worked on was really an early ESB type of project where there was messaging in between and decoupled systems that talked to each other via the message bus. When I was building this, there wasn't many good technologies out there for building lightweight, agile integration solutions. At the time, there was a lot of heavyweight EAI sort of brokers from TIBCO and IBM, and there wasn't much in the open source realm either. I mean, open source just getting started, I guess. I was working there, and I sort of got the idea that there needed to be something much simpler and much more lightweight and geared towards developers, and that's when I started sort of prototyping in my own time what eventually became Mule. The idea behind Mule Simple is make the task of integrating other applications simple so that you can just focus on adding value to the data that you integrate with. And we do that with a very simple model that decouples both, you know, things like the protocol of how the data is being communicated, the data format itself, and the business logic that acts on that data. So it's a nice, clean separation of concerns inside Mule.
And now, so Mule is obviously Java-based. It runs as a web process or an application server process?
No, it's a standalone server that can be run within a web application. But there's actually benefits to running it standalone around the management capabilities, and also even just the footprint. The Mule runtime itself is very reliable. I think about 65% of our customers use Mule standalone. But we allow embedded, mostly because there's a lot of people that's, you know, in their data center, they only deploy to WebSphere, they only deploy to Tomcat. So we obviously make that available too.
Okay. So one of the things I read about and researched about with Mule is that, a lot of these other ESPs require some sort of canonical form document. I guess you let people take the data in any way they want, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I think that was one of the philosophies around Mule, was that I didn't want to be locked into a canonical format. While XML was very popular back then, I really didn't think it was a very good interchange format. And as we know now, we've got things like YAML and JSON, which offer a much nicer representation of data for most scenarios. But the other thing was, Mule is one of the few ESPs that actually like to do streaming and non-streaming and very easily, I mean, purely just by saying you want a stream versus the actual message representation. This means that we get used quite a bit, even in media and content management, because we can actually manage very large payloads.
So when you're talking about media, you're literally talking about potentially even streaming video or something like that?
Well, people have used us for that. I mean, obviously, it depends what you're doing. A lot of the networks actually have a lot of encoding requirements, so they'll use some sort of encoding server to do that. But then they'll use Mule to move the metadata with a reference to that file for then scheduling on programming or whatever else. Mm-hmm. So we've actually got a few customers doing that kind of thing. There's a lot of different scenarios where, certainly streaming is very good.
Okay. So for people getting started with Mule, you know, how do people develop in Mule? Like, what's the general development process like?
Good question. So we try and keep the bar low. So all you really need is Eclipse, some Java development skills, not much, and an XML editor. So the Mule DSL itself is the domain-specific language. This is the way you actually tell Mule what you want to have done. And it's XML-based, and some nice benefits around that, because you get autocomplete, you get in-context help and validation. Obviously, there's a bit of a stigma around XML sometimes, but I think in certain scenarios it works very well. What's nice about Mule is that's not the only representation that you can configure it in. You can use Java code, and we also have Mule Studio. We're doing a beta release in February, and that will allow you to do drag and drop editing, so you can actually just draw your flows the way you would with some of the other tools out there.
Okay, and then so you put these things together. You deploy. Do you deploy Mule integration flows? You know, you have to stop and start the server to do that, or what's your process?
No, you actually create a Mule application, which looks very, very similar to a web application. The difference is instead of a web XML, there's a Mule XML. So for web developers, it's not a massive change. You create those, and you deploy them to Mule by dropping them in a directory. And they're hot deployable, so if you're editing them and making changes once you save them, then you get your changes reflected in the running server. This feature was introduced in Mule 3, middle of last year, but Mule 3 and Mule 3.1 both support hot deployment.
Okay, yeah, that's good, because I remember early on when I was learning to use it, it was put together all your message flows and stop and start. So that's a really nice feature. So this product is what, about 4 or 5 years old at this point, would you say?
Yeah, I think it's changed a lot, though. I mean, yeah. Version 1.3 is when we built the commercial company, mm-hmm. was back in 2006. And then we did 2.0, which really made configuration more powerful, because we added a lot more features around connectivity and some internal stuff. I think Mule 3 is really making a generational change of what you should expect out of an ESB. You know, typically, integration has been about integrating behind the firewall, and Mule 3 sort of blurred the lines between the firewall so that you can now easily integrate with applications in the cloud. We introduced something called Mule Cloud Connect that is specifically built for integrating with SaaS applications like Salesforce or SuccessFactors, but also, you know, the social media platforms such as Facebook and Twitter, and the wrath of other public APIs out there. So we're really enabling enterprises now to use that information to enrich their existing applications, but we also have increasingly more customers running Mule out on Amazon EC2 and just doing cloud-to-cloud integration.
Oh, okay, that's really good. So if you're doing something in EC2, I mean, do you have pre-bundled Amazon EC2 machine images, or are people just kind of unpacking it, putting it in a Linux distro, that kind of thing?
Right now, they're doing it themselves. Uh-huh. It's not actually a very hard task to get Mule onto an AMI, which is why we don't really offer that. We are working towards something much more comprehensive for people. It's about all I can say about it right now, but watch this space.
All right. So, and you had alluded earlier to, you know, setting it up is pretty easy. You just unpack it, fire it up. I guess you've got a standalone engine.
This is Rod. I've been working with Mule probably since the 1.3 days, and doing some interesting things with not necessarily just integration type work, even actually using it kind of like an application server in the early days. But that was only one kind of a one-off. But what I've noticed, I think you mentioned in your blog post in September of last year, that there was a theme to simplify, and most of my recent experience been in the 2x version, and I have to say I unpacked 3.1 last week and literally just ran it, and I was really happy to see everything start up nicely, and it was kind of the familiar application server feel by just starting Mule. It looks like you've made some significant improvements to kind of reach that simplifying goal. The question I had kind of was around some of the native REST support. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, actually, that was one of the big things in Mule 3.0. You know, for those following, I mean, Mule has had REST support since about 2007 when we released the REST pack for Mule, but it was more of an add-on to the platform. With 3.0, we made REST a first-class citizen, and by doing that, we also embraced the surrounding technologies of REST, so it's now become very easy to process RSS and ATOM feeds and also create them. It's become very easy to work with the JSON data format, which is originated from JavaScript, but is used fairly heavily in many of the REST services that are available out there. And this is actually an important point in my mind, because we've actually made JSON a first-class citizen alongside XML as a data format inside Mule. So it's now just as easy, and you have just as much functionality to work with JSON as you do XML. So I can do object bindings, I can do automatic transformations. We even introduced a simple sort of XPath-based language for querying JSON formats as well. So there's a lot of great stuff in there for REST, both publishing and consuming RESTful services. And also related, we even added support for AJAX. One of the nice things in Mule 3 is you can actually now serve HTML pages, so it starts to feel more like an app server. But we're focused purely on a specific sort of architecture whereby, you know, Mule would be the back end runtime serving up RESTful information through RESTful interfaces, and you have a front end such as a JavaScript client that actually consumes it. But the nice thing in Mule 3 is that you can combine all those together in one application and deploy it very easily.
So almost cutting out the middleman, so to speak, with the traditional, you know, web app server, just go right to the integration server.
Exactly. And the reason for doing that is not that, you know, we're trying to get away from app servers, but app servers are not the best container for running REST services. I mean, you really want a service container that thinks of the world as in terms of services, not in terms of, you know, JSPs and servlets. There's some benefits to that around scalability, the way you can manage the back-end services, how you manage things like monitoring and proxying of those services that a service container like Mule will give you, but a servlet container doesn't give you.
So if you're doing an application, I'm sure it's not for everything, obviously, but if you're building an application that has a web presence and part of it needs to be very heavy AJAX, JSON, and you want to leverage some, you know, web services or things across your enterprise, do you see people building traditional web applications and then the AJAX piece goes back to Mule?
We have seen that. We've seen people do that. That's not really our ultimate goal, but yeah, that sort of sparked the direction we went with this. The way we see this really taking off for people is when they're doing a JavaScript front end and right. They want a back end that's all driven through RESTful services. That's really the key model. We do see it, you know, a bit of pollination from the sort of server-side JSP type applications, then talking to Mule. But then you're using two different servers there. And
For
me, applications should be simpler, not more complex.
Right. Many points of failure. Yeah. But I mean, exactly. In that case, do you see a lot of like JSON or not so JSON? I'm sorry, jQuery or something like that. Have you seen some solutions written in this in particular frameworks that seem to fit well with that on the client side?
Yeah, it's a mix right now. So I've actually, you know, jQuery is, you know, ever present everywhere, as you know. I mean, it's sort of all over the place because of the far-reaching nature of that library and surrounding community. We see usage with Mule tools. We see usage with things like EXT or now Sentia. It's sort of a mixed bag right now. The nice thing is because, you know, we don't really mind what the web framework is, and there's a great line of separation, which is the RESTful interface. Yeah. We actually don't even really care because there's no interoperability issues between the two.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Mule kind of in a larger sense. So Mule has an open source license if you want to use the open source version. You get the core product that way, and then you have a commercial based version of Mule, right? And so, outline for people the difference between just getting the open source version and the commercial versions we'll give you.
Okay, so the open source version gives you a fully fledged ESB, and we have over now 2,500 production deployments running various versions of the open source Mule ESB. What you get from the enterprise version is you get the tooling, so you get things like Mule Management Console that allows you to manage and introspect Mule instances remotely. This is pretty valuable, especially early on in project lifecycle when you're just getting started, is that Mule's a bit of a black box. You can't see where messages are always going. If you're trying to debug, you often have to build things into your logic to try and figure out where things are. Where the Mule Management Console allows you to, basically sniff messages as they're going through the system and get a complete 360 view of what's happening. So the tooling is not just about management and monitoring, which you would expect, but it's also about developer productivity. And you'll see in our blog, we actually sort of embrace the DevOps movements with our tooling and try and target both the developer and the operations guy when we're building our tools to ensure that really that we can break down the communication gap between those two parties.
And so the main thing is the management console. Are there other maybe adapters that are enterprise level or things like that?
Yeah, there are. There's a few adapters. So there's the WebSphere MQ native transport. There's the JDBC transport that is sort of being optimized to do batching and high throughput transactions. If you don't need that, then you can use the open source one as well. So we don't leave the open source guys without a database connectivity. There's also more features around security, around SAML and Kerberos and things like that. The kind of things that if you're building a real application in the enterprise, you're probably going to need. We sort of have those sort of features available in the enterprise. If it's any other type of application, then you'll find the feature available in the community edition. Additionally, as well, and the reason why people buy Mule Enterprise is those features, especially MMC and some of the connectors, but also the support and available resources to them. I mean, the support becomes an extra set of team members on any project running Mule, and we really just help people get successful quicker through our support network.
Okay. Now, so Mule 3.1 was just released, right? So what are the major features or changes that people should be aware of in Mule 3.1?
So the major focus for 3.1 is actually two areas. One was Mule Cloud Connect. We really did a lot more work there to add new connectors, but also to prove out the connector model. We actually got more, way more sort of response to Cloud Connect than we could have really hoped for. And it really helped us understand what people were looking for. And one of the things was we needed better packaging. We needed to make it easier for people to contribute connectors. So we worked a lot on that. And then the other side, 3.1 also introduced the enterprise version of Mule 3. And that's focused on the Mule Management Console. So in 3.1 in the console, you now have the ability to deploy Mule applications over a network of Mule instances and monitor that and control it. You can also manage flows as well as services. So for those who don't know, Flow was introduced to Mule 3, and it's a way of doing service orchestration that's a bit more similar to the way people think about doing integration. So I think new users find it a lot easier to use Flow over the older approach, which was service-based.
The old service configuration, is that going to eventually go away, or is it just going to kind of exist with Flow?
No, it exists with Flow. We just basically call them patterns. So there's a Flow, Flow-based pattern, which is different from service. And the service-based pattern, we won't do any more development on that. That will always remain backward compatible. But we will be pushing Flow more vigorously. But we'll also always support the two together. There's no reason to remove one. So we're sticking with them both for the time being.
So am I right in saying that you know, the service base is more quote unquote static in that you define what the pieces parts are and wire them up, and flow is more of a flow of a message through a system. Is that kind of conceptually the difference between the two?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's a good way of describing it. I'd also say I think you can do a lot more with flow, much easier with less configuration, and it's easier to read than than the service-based model, which was a bit restrictive.
Right. Now, when you're writing logic in a flow or even the service model, I remember when I was going through some of the training early on, they were doing Groovy scripting and things like that. Like, what kind of scripting, or when you write code in Mule, I know you can build, you know, Java Pojos and wire them in and certain types of Java classes, but what are your developer options there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Groovy is ever popular as a way of doing quick scripting, both for transformations and logic. Python has gotten a lot more visibility. There's been a lot more sort of blog posts and things around using Python and Mule together. Hmm. Python doesn't really have a notion of any integration platform. So Mule is actually a pretty good fit, especially for some of the IT guys that are doing a lot more stuff in the cloud right now. We see people using Mule with cloud infrastructure to organize events and things, and then Python on the front end. So that's become a lot more popular. And JRuby, the same way, it's very easy to integrate JRuby components with Mule or any other, you know, JVM-based language. So I think the popular ones right now are really those three, Groovy, Python, Ruby, and we expect to see more JavaScript this year, you know, thanks to the more widespread acceptance of JavaScript on the server side.
Oh, okay. So, and what are you using for the JavaScript engine on the server side then? Like, how are
so
you
we're using Rhino. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We can't use the V8 engine, which is from Google, just because it's actually a whole brand new implementation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What was the one you mentioned?
Rhino.
Rhino, right, of course. Okay. Okay, so you pretty much support all the major languages from scripting perspective. Now, if you're running an application that has very high throughput, I mean, will you see a minor slowdown in doing the interpreted languages, or would you recommend people where they find those bottlenecks just rewrite that code in a compiled bytecode language like Java?
Yeah, you'll see some slowdown. For example, Jython, which is the JVM implementation, is not that fast. But what we find is usually the language is not going to be the bottleneck. It's going to be something else.
Yeah, when you're calling a service. Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, there is some performance impact. We minimize that by caching a lot of the context information. So, we do a lot of pre-compile and caching of the pre-compiles behind the scenes so that when that code does get hit, it runs as quickly as you expect Java to run for the most part.
Okay. Let's see here. So we covered flows, covered native. Rod, is there other stuff that you wanted to ask? One thing on my list, and we both looked at Cloud Connect, so it was good we talked about that. One thing on my list was the activity BPM integration. I guess someone at MuleSoft right now is working on putting together integration with activity so you can integrate with BPM flow.
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, activity is a BPMN2 modeler and runtime engine. Mm-hmm. It's a great fit for Mule users. It's very easy to set up. It's not one of these old school BPM providers. It sort of fits very much in our model of how we integrate and how we do things. So we're actually working on the activity team. So we have team members on that project, and we provided the ESP integration and also the web services integration for activity. We'll actually be doing an announcement in a couple of weeks around that, really just to demonstrate the two products working together. That said, I mean, activity is one BPM solution out there. We still continue to support other ones from other providers like Bonita and JBPM. It's just that activity is, in my mind, the most interesting one out there right now for, an enterprise BPM solution that people can really, get going with quickly.
So anything else you want to mention on your end, Ross, that makes Mule's something that stands out as an integration tool that we didn't cover so far?
I mean, you guys, you've blogged about us in the past with different things. I think, what stands us out is, I think of ESBs in terms of generations. I think the first generation was the proprietary guys with their heavyweight ESBs that were previously EII brokers, and they repurposed them.
Yeah.
Mule was the first open source ESB that sort of tackled that space head on, and it sort of created an ecosystem of other open source ESBs out there that really helped push us along. I think the third generation of ESBs is it kind of like the ESB for everyone. We almost need to drop the ESB moniker and talk about integration only. And the focus is having all the capabilities that you would expect from a reliable integration platform, but making it super easy for any kind of developer to access that information and use it. And I think Mule 3 started down that path with Cloud Connects and with the simplicity goal. And I think every new release of 3.1 and then 3.2 following up later this year will make things much easier for people. And our focus on that, I think, makes us a very compelling choice, both from the enterprise and even the sort of newer startups, and definitely the cloud.
Now, if people want to learn more about Mule, I mean, I see that everything's online, but mulesoft.org is the main site to crawl around in the documentation and take a look at the examples. I mean, you have a fair number of examples online too.
We do. And yeah, we're working quite heavily right now on the documentation examples, just to give them a refresh. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot there. Everything is at mulesoft.org. There's the Getting Started Guide, which I'd recommend people just walk through. Most examples don't take more than sort of 5-10 minutes to go through and actually try them. And then there's the user guide, which has all the reference information about how to use different things and everything from transactions to enterprise integration patterns to building web services and RESTful service, things like that.
Okay, great. Yeah. I mean, I know Rod, for example, we were working with Mule at Chariot for what, 3 years now, probably?
Yeah, I think one thing that in my mind it makes Mule stand out is the management console. I don't think that gets talked about enough. Though, just perusing around on the MuleSoft website, you'll see it. But I think with 3.1, the way you can just start up and now see the management console, log on, see the power, see the new ways of provisioning applications, that kind of, I think, really resonates with people and seeing how that can fit into an organization. So anytime I'm talking to people about Mule, I always say, hey, look, you really got to check out the management console. I think that really brings it to light.
All right. Well, listen, Ross Mason, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today about Mule.
Thank you very much.
We also thank Chris Walton for lining up the interview. For more information about Mule, visit www.mulesoft.com. We'll have some useful links on our show note pages at techcast.chariotsolutions.com. TechCast is sponsored and funded by Chariot Solutions. Whether you need training, mentoring, advice, or application development expertise in Java, mobile, and open source technologies, Chariot can help. Visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com and take a look at our upcoming training schedule at chariotsolutions.com/education. Remember, you can register for the upcoming Philly Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise conference by heading to phillyemergingtech.com. Our themes are free theme number 3 and 4 from podcastthemes.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.